So what if I told you that the international law, the one specifically designed to end torture, is actually the very thing making it possible for governments to keep doing it?
It's a pretty unsettling thought.
It really is. Welcome to our exploration into the source material today. We're looking at legal research from John T. Perry, and the mission here is to move past that initial gut reaction of torture is wrong and really look at the legal definition game happening behind the scenes.
Right, because we like to think of the global ban on torture as this, unbreakable iron door bolted shut by modern democracy. But Perry's work suggests that door's actually a sieve.
A sieve.
Yeah. The law doesn't just sit there waiting to be broken. It actively provides the architecture to, well, organize and legitimize state violence.
Wow. So basically, if you're sitting there thinking your rights are a shield, this research implies you might actually just be holding a leash that the state is pulling.
Yeah, exactly. It turns a moral atrocity into a technical game. And it really starts with the UN Convention Against Torture.
Okay, let's unpack that. Because most people, myself included, think that convention is just a simple don't do it rule. But the source material notes it actually sets up three different buckets for behavior, right?
It does. You have torture, which is strictly banned. Then you have cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, or CIDT. And finally, you have permissible conduct.
Wait, so they map out different levels of it.
Exactly. The trick is in how the convention was drafted. It creates a map for states to navigate around the absolute ban. Like, if a state can argue the violence isn't severe enough to be actual torture, it drops into that CIDT bucket.
Where the legal protections are, I'm guessing, much flimsier.
Much, much flimsier.
But hold on. If the ban is supposed to be absolute, how does a memo from, say, one country's lawyers just override international law? I mean, is the law really that weak?
Well, it's not that the law is weak. It's that the law actually contains its own out clauses. For example, there's the lawful sanctions exception.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
So if a state claims a specific type of pain is just a legal penalty rather than an extra legal act, they can argue it's not torture. The source material brings up the U.S. torture memos as an example, where lawyers narrowed the definition of severe pain.
Right, the memos where they said the pain had to nearly reach organ failure or death.
Yeah. The logic goes that if the victim isn't literally dying, it's just, tough interrogation.
That is just so clinical. It's like a tax code for suffering. It shifts the entire debate from is this right to exactly how much agony constitutes organ failure.
It is terrifying. And, it's not just about the intensity of the pain. The research points out it's also about who we decide is eligible for that pain.
Oh, right, the othering of the victim. The text mentions states using cultural sensitivity as a weapon, which sounds totally backward.
I know, it really does. Scholars call this Orientalist discourse. The state exoticizes the victim as barbaric or, traditional to justify violence you would never tolerate against a typical Western citizen.
Wait, I need to push back there just a bit because usually being culturally aware is a good thing, right? How exactly does the law twist that into a tool for violence?
It sounds completely counterintuitive, but look at the justifications for tactics used at places like Abu Ghraib, as cited in the material. Interrogators used military dogs or sexual humiliation and claimed they were simply exploiting Arab cultural fears.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. By calling a reaction a cultural trait, they basically strip away the victim's individual legal armor before the interrogation even begins.
So they aren't seen as a person with universal rights anymore.
Exactly. They're categorized as a specimen of a barbaric culture that needs special handling. The violence becomes a corrective measure instead of a crime.
So the law provides the loopholes, and this othering picks the targets. But the real aha moment for me in Perry's work was that this management of the body isn't just happening in dark rooms abroad.
Right, it hits much closer to home. He argues it's the exact same logic used to manage us, everyday citizens, even through the rights we think protect us.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because we usually think of rights, like the Fourth Amendment in the US protecting against unreasonable search, as shields.
We do, but the source material looks at the mechanism in cases like United States versus Drayton. The court essentially ruled that a reasonable person would cooperate with police even if they don't legally have to.
Wait, so if the court defines a good citizen as someone who cooperates and consents to a search, then asserting your right to say no makes you, what, unreasonable? Suspect?
That is the paradox.
Yeah.
Yes. The right becomes a tool for the state to measure your cooperation. When the state grants you positive rights, like the right to care or protection, it gains the legal authority to manage your body to ensure you're getting that care.
So it's like, instead of a shield, our rights are the strings the state uses to pull us into its orbit. Are we actually safer or just more efficiently regulated?
That's exactly the question the research poses. Rights don't just limit the state, they tie you closer to it.
It really makes you realize that state violence isn't a failure of the legal system. It's a feature of how the system categorizes and controls us. The hinges on that iron door of the law just swing both ways.
Yeah, depending entirely on who is standing on either side of it.
It leaves you with a really heavy thought. Because we use the word humanity as the foundation for all these protections.
Right, universal human rights.
But if the concept of humanity is just a tool used by powerful states to decide who is and who isn't civilized enough to be protected, could the very idea of universal human rights actually be the most effective tool for imperial expansion ever invented?
That is a massive question to sit with.
It really is. Something for you all to think about the next time you hear a politician talk about bringing human rights to the rest of the world.